Okay, so thanks. So I want to tell you today about an experimental system from Sang-Woo Kim and Irvin Chan at UCLA. And I came to this problem after the paper was already published or about to be published. So sort of came into it a little bit late in the game. Of course, he's at the same institution just next door, and that's the reason why. Just to give you a background again, we're interested in hematopoiesis, and in particular the stem cells, hematopoietic stem cells. These are just some numbers which you already know, so I'll quickly go through the next slide. So one question is how many stem cells typically active in an animal? That's one question. Another question that they were trying to address, this is the main question they wanted to address. When are these stem cells, when are they committed to being part of the lymphoid tract or the myeloid tract? So the way they chose to look at this was to use marking, lentiviral marking. And the experiment is, where's my finger? So they isolated CD34 cells, mobilized them, took them out. Took them out of four rhesus macaques, NIH actually, infected them, gave them a viral marking. Not all of them got infected. Not all the cells took, of course. Irradiated the animal, transplanted back in, okay, and then wait, and then take blood samples over about 14 years now. So I think there was actually originally six animals, and there's four now. So these are the steps, right? Mark with lentivirus, vector extract. So the experimental part, I'm a theorist, so the experimental part I'm just more or less parroting back to you from what I understand, but the details are in this paper, stem cell. Okay, so what does one get? Well, right, if you plot, so each of these colors is one clone. So the idea is that when the lentivirus genome incorporates, it's random. Right? So each one would be unique, statistically. The location, correct. So it's not barcoding. It's marking, right? Okay. So there's the inserted vector. There's some technology which I don't really understand, but it's sequencing the overlap region with the native cellular DNA, and then.
So in what regime are they? So basically, almost every cell has one unique marker, or a small fraction of cells has unique markers, or something.
Small fraction. I'll show that. I'll show the plot. Right. So I said that many of them are unmarked. Right. They stay white, and then also many of them don't take hold.
So
how many did they put in?
Yeah, how many did
tens of millions.
These are not
the estimate. CD34, which includes a whole bunch of stuff, but because they're doing a very long-term analysis, the assumption is that the short-term stuff died away, okay, and that you're just looking at long-term effects. So they tell me. Okay, so you get these plots. These are a fraction of quantitative integration sites. So the thickness of each of these slivers is basically the fraction of all labeled cells here that are of this particular insertion location, right, of this particular clone. So very, very messy looking. There's an initial transient, which you would expect after radiation and retransplanting back in. But then there's sort of this long-term behavior, okay? And I won't go into the details of what they said, but the findings of this paper was that they looked at these clones in particular types of cells, differentiated cells. And the result actually was that these cells, the labeled cell, the marked cells, had really three groups. And one was sort of more inclined to be lymphoid, myeloid, or balanced. Okay, so they did some clustering and they showed that. And that changed over time, over the age of the animal, that the balanced fraction became more and more predominant. Right, and the lymphoid went down.
They did a time course.
They did time course, yeah.
So is that, that's in blood itself?
This is right, differentiated blood. And they separated granulocytes with the mononuclear cells. Okay, so what else can you say about this, right? So we had this rich set of data, a lot of it, and we're just thinking, well, you know, what, can we say anything else as a theorist? Okay, so here's our attempt anyway, and it's, you know, mildly a failure, mildly a success, I guess. So we want to sort of think about how can we model this? Yeah.
Can we just ask again about the data? So what does the data tell us? So is it assumed that all the, because some of the cells are not labeled, so
right.
Does this assume that what they measure is actually adequately samples every clone, or what's happening?
What do you mean adequately samples every clone?
I'm not sure what you mean.
So the fraction would be, okay, let me just skip quickly. The fraction, here, is what you want. This is the total granulocyte number. These are the labeled. So it's a small fraction,
okay.
Less than 10%, you know, 1 or 2% of total labeled. Okay. And then within that, about 50, order 30 to 100 different clones make up 50% of the green line.
But these clones, they're
okay,
not
so it's a small fraction.
They're not different functions, though, not necessarily. It's just that cell with that particular label it has expanded.
That's right. That's right. And it could be a different one at a different time, and that's the point of this study.
But then we don't see like what's the smallest fraction in which the clone is present that they can see.
You don't. Okay. They had some cutoff, which is in one sample one, I suppose, right? In each sample sequencing.
That's probably the one.
Well, I'll show that you won't even see a lot. So, okay, so.
And how much blood are you taking? Going the wrong
way.
Answering the questions.
How much blood I.
Because you also have that sampling issue, right?
Yes, which I will get to. Something like 50 ml, something like that, that's right.
I'm also confused. So you said you are looking at two cell types, granulocytes and another one? Or
maybe 10 ml. PBMC.
But in the previous graph that you showed, it's just one of the two.
It's just one, yeah. And the other one looks pretty much qualitatively by eye similar. Right? Nothing really distinguishable. And even this long term, right, doesn't look, after 6 months or so, the statistics of this looks, you know, just by eye, looks about the same. This thing levels off. These are the small ones, not shown here. It's part of the fraction, right? So this is the first, I don't know, 20 or so, or 30 or something like that. So it's highly variable. We don't know what's going on. And you can see some of them actually, well, it's hard to see here, but some of them actually disappear and reappear. Now, that's a puzzle. We don't really address this in this thing, but hopefully the analysis will give us ideas on how to do that in the future.
Tom, yeah. This is one monkey over the course of 14 years?
Yes. No, four.
Four. So this is the average data.
This is one of them, this plot.
One.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
That's
but there are four.
So which cell is this?
Which cell? This one, right here, I don't know. It's just a representative plot.
Okay.
Show that. I mean, they look roughly the same. If you look at the paper, they have all the supplementary information. It looks sort of the same. There's a little bit of coarsening. Okay, so they say that the lymphoid fraction decreases, the balanced one slowly increases over time, and that's presumably an aging effect, right? This is over a few years, over 3 or 6 years. They see that, and there's a little bit of coarsening. The total number of clones that you see slowly decreases, but very, very minor. It's very minor. But in between, there's these large fluctuations every few months or so when they take the sample.
What you call balanced ones are the PBMCs?
No, balance is both. There's some cells that seem to produce constantly a fraction of granulocytes and myeloid and lymphoid. So they classified it into three groups, predominantly myeloid, lymphoid, and this balance. Yeah.
I mean, this, my sincere apologies for being late, but how do you label the cells?
With the lentiviral marking.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
And then sequencing. But
the cells are labeled in the monkey, or they're
labeled outside.
And then they're transplanted.
And then they're transplanted, right, after irradiation. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So right. All right. So that's sort of the technical issues, which I, you know, I only know what I read and what they've told me over a number of meetings. So we thought about, okay, how does one go about modeling these numbers, right? Can we make sense? Can we have any kind of like a mechanistic framework of why these patterns are random and you know, why that distribution is the way it is, which I'll plot. Okay, so the simplest thing one can think of is just to say, you've got some long-term HSCs, maybe the short-terms have exhausted off somehow, and then there's some transient amplifying pool, which the cell undergoes differentiation, then a final terminal differentiation step. Right? Each of these has their mean turnover rates, if you will. Right? Let's just lump everything together. Right? It's a simple lumped model. One can think about this, and there would be basically three pools here, and you'd write the whole population of the, you'd write this population, this progenitor population, and a differentiated cell population, that's the in the animal, from which you draw the sample, is this pool. And you can just write some simple like this. We don't know about the regulation. It's probably in, so alpha is the initial differentiation rate, right? This could be symmetric or asymmetric. And then these further stages. We can lump all this together and write it as NP. And the regulation, one could put in something such as a logistic or a hill type form, right? And then this is the turnover rate. Turnover rate includes the death rate of some sort, and then also the terminal differentiation rate. And eta is just a factor that tells you whether it's symmetric or asymmetric. So these are just simple rate equations, and this is used just to balance the total number, right, to keep the number fixed so things don't blow up. Okay, but if I did this, right, now if I wanted to keep track of the different clones, now each of these, so there are many of these transplanted back in, and each of them will be have a different viral integration site. So they're different species, if you will. So if I separated the population into species I and wrote the same equations, they would be the same, right? This would be the stem cells, the progenitor, and D is differentiated. But if I write this is, of course, an equation for the expected number of each one. The equations are the same for everyone. Right, that's the other assumption, that the viral integration site did not affect the fitness of the cells. And they did some statistical tests to sort of justify that. So this is just a tracer, just a marking.
But NP in the R of NP would be the sum of all our numbers.
It would be the sum, correct. So it's nonlinear here, right?
I mean, this is the problem with all these viral marking.
Yeah.
And it's probably true to some extent, to some, but
that's right.
Never quite
yes.
sure that
yes.
it doesn't
that's right.
sensitive
yeah.
side.
Yeah, energy, yeah. Right? They discussed that a bit. Yeah. So right, sort of more barcoding methods. Yeah. Okay. So of course, all populations are equivalent, and you wouldn't get any distribution, right? You wouldn't say, you know, why would one population be larger than others that way? So, of course, and this is what. Someone has said, Grant was saying that it would be a delta function distribution. All expected number of clones would be exactly the same size. Okay. So instead of looking at that, we're going to deal with the diversity. We'll deal with the clone size distribution directly, right? So we look at the density of states. So this is the clone identity, right? And this goes up to the total number of different integration sites that you put into your system, which would be millions. And this is the number of cells of that clone at any given time, suppose. And it doesn't matter what pool this is in, right? Let's say this is in the progenitor pool. So instead of looking at the number of cells of clone J, I'm going to track the number of clones at any given time represented by K cells. Okay, so for example here, the number of clones represented by one cell, right? So this is one cell. There's one here, one, two, three, four. So I'm going to call that C sub K. So C sub 1 would be 4. This example. So I'm basically taking a density of states. Right? So let's look at this number. Let's directly deal with this number. Right, here it is, right? C sub 1 is 4. And C sub 2 would be this one here, 1, Two. So that's two. Okay. And then this is just the cumulative, which we're going to use for fitting data a little bit later, which is a little easier. Okay. So this is the definition. C sub k. This is delta. This should be ni of t here. Ni of t is the number of clones number of cells of clone I. If I sum over all I, whenever it matches k, that counts me one. C, capital C, is the total number of colors that I put in, right? The total number of different, which is a huge number, okay? So this is a large number, and we just sum, and that's the definition. So one can write equations for ni, stochastic or otherwise, and then try to convert back into this density of states and look at this variable directly. Okay, so here's the model, okay? And then we'll try to fit, and this was recently published. Okay, so I'm going to assume, right, there's a bunch of cells, unlabeled, labeled ones, which I put in different colors and different shapes. They're all unique, random insertion. There's a differentiation rate, alpha. And as you, those of you might notice that, some of you might notice that the C sub K, right, the way I've drawn it here, this is, the mathematical structure is identical to that of the nucleation model or self-assembly, right? The Becker-Doehring equations in nucleation. So we're going to categorize them in terms of clusters. So, right, this is C sub K. How many clones are of size 3? C sub 3, let's say. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. That's it, right? Yeah. Oh, yellow, 4, right? And then the terminal differentiation rate. And then this is the transient amplifying pool. This is the differentiated blood pool. This is the peripheral blood in the animal. Then I'm going to take a sample. This is my final sampling, right? I'm going to take a small fraction of that and then do the cloning here, okay? So each of these stages, I'm going to lose some clones, right? I'm going to lose diversity, and I'll calculate that next few slides. Okay, so the equations, right? These are the unlabeled cells in the progenitor pool. That's just population. This is the growth rate. This, again, is nonlinear. It depends on total population. That's my regulation. Turnover. Immigration or differentiation from capital U. Capital U is here. Right? This is the whites going in to forming the whites here. C sub K are these equations, right? So what does this mean? We have C sub 0. C sub 0 are the number of clones out of the capital C that are unrepresented in the progenitor pool, right? So if it's unrepresented and I insert a cell, I differentiate a cell, I add to C1, right? And if C1, and if I add a cell, if I add, if a cell that's already represented by C1 differentiates, I lose it, and I create a C2, right, down here. This is just the birth and death terms, and this is both of these terms, right? And the rest of the CK are just simple birth and death. Birth, death, and immigration, really, right, differentiation.
So what's capital C?
Capital C is the total number of different clones.
So it's the
number of cells that took, basically. If you assume each cell, number of infected cells that took hold, each one being unique. That's the assumption, right?
Okay.
That you didn't insert the viral genome exactly in the same place twice. Okay? So one could say that these stem cells are unique, each one. Or one could have self-renewal, which I'll get to.
Okay,
right? So right now I'm not assuming self-renewal. This alpha is purely asymmetric, just for simplicity for now, just say it's asymmetric differentiation. So these stay fixed. These are dynamically changing through birth and death. These are dynamically changing birth and death. These are sampled from the small sample, right? So this is really a three-pool model. It's the simplest model I can come up with. This is sort of a pharmacokinetic type approach.
And where is the relation to the cluster model? I don't see these are
the Becker-Doehring equations.
Okay, but it's just basically one molecule detaching and reattaching to another cluster.
Yes.
Without
yes.
collisions of clusters.
Okay. No. Right.
Okay.
Right. One at a time, and that comes from growth or coming in. Correct. Okay. So that's this pool. Now, if we want to go to this pool, right? There's this final terminal differentiation rate. there's a differentiated pool turnover. Okay, now we have to think about classes a little bit. So in order to think about the number of clones in this pool, represented by exactly n cells, I need to condition on these cells coming from clones in the previous pool represented by k cells. Okay, I can't just write, so the equations, let me just put the equations here. So these are the equations for y sub n super k. Y sub n super k is the number of clones, number of different colors, lineages, represented by exactly n cells in the peripheral pool, the differentiated pool, but that came from only those clones that were represented by k cells in the previous pool. There's a little convergence. If you work through that, this is the immigration term, right? This omega times k, k because it's the number of cells in that particular previous clone. Omega is that terminal differentiation, right? This is the immigration, and then this is just death. So in the peripheral pool, we just have immigration and death, no self-renewal, no growth. Okay. So how are these equations connected? Well, the y0 has the c of k in here. y0 is the number of clones, unrepresented still, but that came from the kth clone, the came from clones of size k in the previous pool, and that's just this. So the c of k comes into here. The equations are nonlinear, right? This equation is linear, but the c sub k is nonlinear because it's in this equation, and the r's, right, depend on the total progenitor pool population. That's the self-regulation. Okay, so we have to solve these equations for c, feed forward to these equations for y through this term here, solve for y, then sample from y, a small fraction, and then count what you expect would be the number of clones in your test tube. Okay, and of course you can sum over all k just to get the total number of clones represented by n cells. Okay, so then there's sampling. So that's the second pool. Then the third pool is the sampled pool. So S is the number of sequences you drew. ND is the total number of differentiated cells. It's a total blood in the animal. And I'm only going to draw a small fraction, right? Something like 2% or 3% each time, right? Every month or so that they did this. Okay, so we can calculate the expected number of clones represented by K cells in your test tube. Right? So we can write down the exact value, and it's just this delta function, where S, now you have to sort of really think combinatorically. It's the number of cells sampled from the jth clone, now I'm labeling the clones, from the peripheral pool, among only those that have population L. So this is M sub K, right? If you think about it a little bit, this is J from one, sum from one to Y sub L. Y sub L is the number of clones in the peripheral blood, right? And then the total peripheral blood population is the ND. So this is large. We can take this to infinity. Okay, and then we can write down the probability for sampling this variable SJL, right? And that's it. This is a combinatoric factor. This is the factor that says that I sequence exactly capital S. Okay, so this is a constraint on this SJL. This is just, if you just do the combinatorics, it's counting the number of ways of choosing SJL. And then we can look at the mean, the expected value of this M sub K. Okay, M sub K, again, is the number of clones represented by exactly K cells in my test tube, in my sample. Okay, so this is the final product. And we do this. And this calculation is generating function, whatever. So the result is down here. It's simple. It's Y sub L, right? It's related to Y sub L like this. Epsilon is your sample size fraction, okay? Y sub L, again, was the solution of those equations that depended on C, right? So we have to solve everything and do this. This is the cumulative also. Okay, so now let's look at how we can use this. And this is where we struggled a bit. Still struggling, I think. Okay, this is the total number of cells. These are the total number of labeled cells in one particular cell type in one particular animal. Now, it's Okay, and this is the initial time, and they say there's some transient here, and then there's this noise.
It's not actual cell number, right?
It's sequences in the sample. Yeah. So each sample has order of 10,000 or so sequences.
So can I just, I don't want to interrupt, but the sequencing itself usually contains an amplification step. Is that part of the
They gave that number to me, so I took it. Yeah.
You can ask.
Yeah. Them. Yeah. Right, there's an amplificon in the thing. There is.
That may be very uneven.
Yeah. Right. They discussed this with me quite a bit. They only took short sequences that had less noise and stuff like that. Okay. So the issue is now we're trying to model this, right? And it's fluctuating, right? It doesn't seem so on the scale, but it's fluctuating relative to its size quite a bit. But
what is grams?
Granulocytes. Okay. Now, if you look at this, though, there's a bit of correlation. I didn't write it here, but the correlation coefficient is about 0.6 between these two curves, right? So this is high here, this is high here, a little high here, a little high here, and this noise actually matches that. So there's some.
Can you say again what the data actually are?
This is total cells and total cell numbers. In a sample, in a draw.
Right.
These are the total number of labeled granulocytes in that same sample. Say that again?
So there would have been a lot of processes. It's not like this is 50 milliliters. The reason for pointing it out is more just that there's a series of steps, like Thomas would have mentioned.
Yeah. Right. This is what they, don't know exactly what the steps are. But I know they count, so they put a fluorescent tag with the marking, and this is the fluorescence in some units. And this is the total cell in that sample, right, including unlabeled. So most, this is all unlabeled, and this is labeled. That's it, right? So most of it is unlabeled still. You get the small fraction that's labeled, but they're correlated, to some degree. 0.6, between 0.5 and 0.7 is the correlation coefficient.
What coefficient is that?
It's,
German or person or?
I just did x minus x bar, y minus y bar over x bar, y bar. Yeah, summed over each, yeah. So this suggested to us that there is some kind of underlying process that brings everything up and down, right? So this could be maybe how the animal's feeling, maybe the turnover rate, the death rate is changing, the state of the animal over, at the time of the draws. It could be perhaps cells moving within different compartments. So there's some kind of, sort of overall shift, right, in the total number.
I don't want to really interrupt you too much at this point, but I have difficulty understanding the setup. So the monkeys get stem cells.
Yes.
Labeled stem cells.
Yes.
And they're irradiated before.
Yes.
So that the cells you see here are entirely derived from the labeled stem cells that have been transplanted.
No, there's still some that are not
transferred. And can we distinguish that in this graph?
No, they're just unlabeled.
I see.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And the number, the estimates for it was a non-lethal dose, right, of radiation. So, I mean, probably, the estimates are around 50%.
Okay.
Right. So,
again, the sites will be short-lived, right?
In the
short-lived. In this scale, there won't be any original kind.
That's true, but they will be produced both by transplanted and non-transplanted stem cells.
Right.
Yeah.
That was my question. And the number is through counting cells or through sequencing?
This is through EGFP.
Okay.
This is through counting cells somehow, which I don't know exactly how.
This is counting granulocytes after irradiation.
Well, this is a sample after, irradiation. This is after.
And the monkey doesn't have an infection that they.
don't know, right? I mean, that's the point. So there's some kind of randomness, but it seems like this, you know, it's something that's lifting the whole population equally, more or less. Okay.
But also, I mean, so you're getting a blood sample, right? So if this is cell numbers, it could also just be the variability in the size of the sample drawn.
No. I forget if this plot has it factored out or not. But even if the sample is there. The draw size is the same. It's the density of cells is different.
Well, the draw size will be somebody with compassion.
Well, yeah, I know. But so this intrinsic, this variability is larger than probably the, but the draw sample was recorded. And
but it would also explain why the two are correlated, right?
That would, yes.
Well, typically measuring cell numbers is very, very variable. You have to lyse the erythrocytes and things like that.
I see.
So
that would be an external factor, and that would affect all of everything equally.
Dramatically. Tricks to do with using beads in that sample before you do them
Okay. So it's not surprising that they're calling the same. Well, that's good, actually. That's good for the assumptions that we make. And the assumption is, we looked at this and we said, well, let's try to define, right? We had that cumulative before. Let's define the rescaled cumulative, right? Let's define the fraction, instead of the number of clones, we define the total fraction of clones with a particular size Q bar, where Q bar is the rescaled clone size, the largest one in this, based on the largest and the smallest one that you can detect, the smallest one being one, okay? So if we just rescale, all right, so these are the different clones, some number of them. This is the rescaled clone size. It's a fraction of the total labeled cells. It's, again, very noisy, up and down, right, each clone. So this is something I haven't really talked about. We looked at those sliver plots before, and I mentioned that some of them disappear, some of them actually even reappear or appear later on, right? So you can see some of these are going up, and then some come down below detection, and then some come up again. But if I plot the cumulative, of course, you know, you plot cumulatives, everything looks much better, closer anyway. If I plot the cumulative of this, these are all the curves at the different times. Okay. This is just a reference binomial distribution, treating all clones the same. So if I look at the cumulative of this relative size, they're fairly close, right? They don't really change after the first couple of time points. So we're just going to make a huge assumption and solve those equations that I presented in steady state, right? These equations, this one and this one, plug it into that. Look at steady state. And in steady state, there's a solution, analytic. Okay, so this is the solution for the C, for the equation. Alpha is, the differentiation rate. Mu should be mu p, actually. Mu is the progenitor cell death rate. R is the growth rate evaluated at steady state, right? Remember, the growth rate depends on the total population. So that's R. And then one can calculate the number of lost clones, right, in the first pool. That's C0. That's the number of clones that are not represented by any cell. And that's the total cell number, the total clone number of different clones, times this factor, which is a little less than 1. Right? So R bar is R over mu. And A is alpha over R. That'll be on the next slide. Right? So this A is alpha over R. And that's, okay. And then after solving for C, the equation for Y, the solution of Y of K is just this. And then I redefine this terminal differentiation rate. I normalize this is a normalized terminal differentiation rate.
All right, let's track what is alpha and R.
Alpha is the initial HSC differentiation rate, the immigration rate. R is the growth rate in the TA pool, transient amplifying. pool. But evaluated at steady state, remember, R depends on the total population. So it's the population at equal at steady state. Okay. So you do that, and then when you can calculate the rest of the numbers, right? So this is the expected number of clones in each compartment. So everything is less than C, of course. Right? This is the progenitor pool. I just rewrote that. It's just 1 minus C sub 0, right, in the previous slide. C sub D is the expected number of clones that you measure that exist in the peripheral blood. And then C sub S is what you sample. This is the expected number of clones you expect. And it, of course, this last thing depends on epsilon. This last quantity depends on epsilon. Epsilon is your sample size, your draw size. And right, these are all very close. And then, of course, CS could be much less than CD. Okay. So these formula might be useful. Okay. Well, all right, so the exact results, of course, in the model, we had these many parameters, right? We had the unlabeled stem cells, colored, number of colors in the stem cells. P was this, that was probably, P is the R. It's R is the P times, go back. R is something like P times K over NP plus K. Or I could have used something like P1 minus N over K, something like that, any kind of regulation. So P is that intrinsic rate. I've got the turnover death rates, and then this S, the number of sequences I drew, right? So there are a lot of parameters in this model. But actually, if I did the asymptotics and looked at reasonable numbers for these, I mean, these are very large, right? You expect this to be very large. K is sort of like a carrying capacity of the progenitor pool. I'm guessing at least 10 to the 9 or something, some factor like that. So if you, this is very large, right? C, U is also very large. If you put these large numbers in, it turns out that the results actually don't depend on all these parameters independently, which is both good news and bad, right? It's good news to a physicist maybe, but actually it shows that the fitting is not going to tell you much, right? And it may be ill-conditioned in case that will be actually the case. So asymptotically, for large system sizes, the expected number of clones that you would measure of size K in your sample is the result. And it only depends, you see, it only depends on two parameters, right? With much weaker dependencies on all kind of difficult.
What confused me is that you fit it to the raw data rather than the scale data.
Yes, we thought about just averaging doing all the scale data and fitting it to that and just getting one number, but we have to go back and do that probably. Yeah, but we wanted to look at each individual time point to see, okay. So the thought is this, I guess. We're thinking there's some kind of process that just goes up and down, right? And if we fit this, so you see the variability in the parameters we get in the A, right? The A from each curve at each time point is different. But the A is A over R, which have all these other parameters, like carrying capacity. So, and S, capital S. So we're thinking, we get an A that varies in time, but you could imagine that some of those variables parameters are actually fixed, and some of the other ones are varying in time. And hopefully the other ones are the ones that are sort of bringing the whole population up and down, right? So this is, we get an effective A star and R star that does depend on time, but what composes A and R are a combination of parameters, and not all of them may be depending on time.
You have multiple cell types that get measured at the end, right? So they don't just measure granular sites. So for each barcode, you have more than one cell type you get measurements from. And this would be biased by the fact that you're looking at these high producing HSCs. But then some of them do find persistence in what they produce, and then they only produce some sets of the potential final cell.
Yeah, that's why they concluded that some you only saw some clones in myeloid or lymphoid, or that's how they separated.
I didn't see that being managed.
No, I'm not. We didn't.
So now I should ask this question to you at the hearing. So I thought you also had some model that predicted T cell repertoire clone size distribution, the power law. Is it the same thing, or it's a completely different? Because you also see a power law distribution.
I see. Yeah, with a cutoff.
Of course. I'm just curious, yeah. Is it consistent, or is it completely different model? What's, if you know?
I mean, I think a model is usual policy, you know,
okay. So does your model deal with N or C? Do you deal with the diversity directly, or do you deal with N? The number of cells of a particular clone, is that how you derive it, or is it? Because I know how the two are connected, actually, but
it is absolute numbers.
Okay. Okay.
First of all, it's not a model that fits on data at all. Right? It's purely The main ingredient is that each clone experiences a multiplicative noise in its first and death phase.
Okay.
So it is noise in the rays themselves rather than both.
Okay.
And then that puts some flux on the clones and close to the
Okay.
Is enough to get power out of any exposure to us. So I don't know exactly.
I think it can be related. See, but the C sub K is related through that delta function, right? That definition, the density of states. So you can take some kind of master equation or something for the number of cells of each clone and look at the variability and then get an expected C of K out also. And I've looked at different cases, and some cases it's very similar. Some.
Okay.